Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, March 7th, 2016. A prominent human rights group says both SPLM in opposition and the government are still committing human rights abuses.
Particularly in Wau, Bibor, and former Western Equatorial State in Mundre, where civilians were forced to flee their residents and are reportedly in dire need of humanitarian assistance.
And what is the future of politics in Sudan without Hassan al-Turabi?
There is no clear figure in the party, with the exception of Sadiq, son of Hassan al-Turabi. So I think we need until they just decide finally the form of the new leadership.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan Human Rights Commission is accusing the government and the SPLM in opposition of continuing to violate ceasefire agreements and of committing human rights abuses. Human Rights Watch says government soldiers murdered civilians, burned and looted homes, and arbitrarily arrested people in Western Equatoria. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Juba.
Fidencia Charles is the commissioner at South Sudan's Human Rights Commission. She says she is deeply concerned about renewed fighting between the government and rebel forces in parts of the country.
Particularly in Wau, Bibor, and former Western Equatorial State in Mundre, where civilians were forced to flee their residents and are reportedly in dire need of humanitarian assistance.
The commission also condemned the killing of more than 18 people by unidentified gunmen in unmissed protection of civilian sites in Malakan on February 18th. The commission is urging the government and other armed groups to ensure their forces observe the permanent ceasefire in accordance with the August peace agreement. Charles commended steps taken by the government in forming two committees to investigate the incidents and
urged the respective committees to expedite their work, make it public, and ensure accountability measures are taken.
Charles is also appealing to UNMISS to carry out its own investigation and to ensure the protection of civilians. She says the government and the SPLAIO should not only implement the agreement in its entirety, but show some leadership by working together in the interests of the suffering South Sudanese people. Charles wants regional bodies to help restore peace in South Sudan. In a report released yesterday, the U.S.-based Human Rights Watch said both the government and armed opposition have committed serious abuses. It says government forces have carried out numerous killings, enforced disappearance, rapes, and other grave abuses in the Western Equatorial region during renewed fighting in the area. The report also says armed rebel groups in the same area have also committed serious abuses, including rape. But SPLM-IO advanced team spokesman William Ezekiel adamantly denies the accusations.
So what is now taking place in Western Equatoria, actually it is the government attacking the opposition locations. We are in the rural areas. It is the government that really goes out from its bases. So we don't commit these atrocities. It is the government always, the government forces that commits all these and its militia. Allied militia groups.
Acting SPLA spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Marco Mayol also denied government forces took part in any criminal activity in former Western Equatorial State. Mayol insists the permanent ceasefire is generally holding in that part of the country.
The whole of the South Sudanese people are looking for peace, and those who are fighting now is son and daughters of this community. The peace signed between IO and Republic of South Sudan government, I think it covers all South Sudan people.
Mayol charges that Human Rights Watch fell short of providing specific details. Under the peace deal, President Salva Kiir and former rebel leader Riek Machar agreed to form a transitional government and cease all hostilities and abuses. Since then, Human Rights Watch says fighting between the South Sudan's Liberation Army and the SPLA in opposition not only continued but has spread to previously uncontested areas in the western part of the country. The August peace agreement recommended a formation of a hybrid court established by the African Union Commission to try the most serious crimes. Human Rights Watch wants the African Union to establish that hybrid court now. The rights group is also calling upon the United Nations Security Council to impose an arms embargo on the warring parties to prevent further violence. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Philip Aleu contributed to that report from Juba. Like many other South Sudanese, refugees in northern Uganda are not happy about delays in implementing the peace deal signed by President Salva Kiir and former rebel leader Riek Machar last August. The refugees are calling on the international community to press both sides to abide by the permanent ceasefire and fully implement the deal. Bonifacio Taban visited Buwale Refugee Settlement Camp and reports for VOA from Kampala, Uganda.
Refugees Gadet Gadiang said he is disturbed to hear that nearly 6 months after the leaders of the warring party signed a peace deal, violence still persists in several parts of the country. And he said the creation of 28 states doesn't help either.
It is obstacle to the people of South Sudan because it is creating more problems, especially the current violence in the Malakal, in the UNIDF camp. It is the outcome of the 28 states. So I don't see that the creation of 28 states is going to be peaceful.
Gadiang said many South Sudanese do not identify with South Sudan as a nation, but rather with their tribe. He blames South Sudan government for the recent attacks at the UN camp in Malakal town. 18-year-old Rebecca James and other South Sudanese refugees from Jonglei blame both President Kiir and Riek Machar for failing to discipline in some errant soldiers who are still carrying out attacks across the country. Jimmy said he does not believe that either Mr. Kiir or Machar are capable of restoring last peace in South Sudan.
They gave them a lot of time for them to understand themselves and forgive each other. But they have done nothing more, though they are still killing people up to these days. So for me, I don't have any trust in them.
James urged the international community and regional bloc, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, to pressure South Sudanese leaders to stop the violence. Many refugees at this resettlement camp said they are willing to return to South Sudan if the leaders restore peace. But they also said they doubt the leaders of the two sides are committed to the fully implementing the peace deal. For BOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban, reporting from Kampala, Uganda.
Those fears of continued violence in South Sudan are not unwarranted. The governor of Wau State is calling on citizens to reconcile with the army following recent violence that has killed dozens of people and displaced hundreds of others. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Wau.
One resident who declined to be recorded for fear of the government says she yelled out for help. She says the soldier then shot her on her right hand. Eyewitnesses say civilians then came out of their homes by the dozens and followed the soldier, who fired several shots towards them. But they charged forward with sticks and stones, grabbed the soldier and beat him to death. Speaking in Arabic, while traditional chief Joseph Stephen Vuga says civilians took the law into their own hands because they feel no one is protecting them.
The civilians are annoyed and are wondering about who is protecting them if soldiers are shooting civilians without a reason. That is why the civilians say they should provide security for themselves. That is why when they hear gunshots, they don't fear, but they advance towards the shooter because they are aware that if a soldier shoots a civilian, there should be accountability.
Wau State Governor Elias Waya Nyipoch says the soldier killed by civilians on Wednesday was drunk. Speaking in Arabic, Nyipoch is calling on traditional chiefs to advise their citizens not to kill armed soldiers.
You, the chiefs, are staying together with the civilians. you should take care of this responsibility. Like this one which happened in Kusti. A soldier was drunk and started shooting and wounded a civilian. You should not kill, but arrest. If you are able to do so, then hand him to the authorities. But taking the law into your own hands by stoning someone to death, you will not solve the problem. These soldiers are important for our national duty.
But Chief Vuga says that does not happen. A soldier is never arrested or disciplined.
This has never happened. There is a deployment of a joint patrol force to respond in case of a crime. Whenever you call them, they arrive late and find that the criminal has gone.
Dozens of people have died and hundreds more are displaced from their homes in rural areas of Wau County following recent clashes between the armed and unidentified gunmen. Bishop Abraham Yael Nial of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan in a will called on South Sudanese to put their differences aside and work for the good of the country.
We, the church and traditional leaders from the Greater Barguzar region, call on all South Sudanese citizens to embrace peace and live in harmony with one another.
Bishop Nial condemned any form of violence and appealed to communities across the country to respect each other's culture and way of living. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
Dimo Silva contributed to that story from Wau. Some opposition politicians say they are opposed to South Sudan's admission into the East African Community. They worry that citizens of other East African countries will take over jobs meant for South Sudanese. They also say joining the regional economic bloc will only open the country to products from other areas and slow economic development. Mungume Debs Rokarinyi reports for VOA from Juba.
The East African Community admitted South Sudan on Wednesday during its 17th ordinary summit at the East African Heads of States. Andrew Okony Ayom, chief whip of the main opposition, the Democratic Change Party, says there is no reason to join the regional bloc at this time.
When you are joining in the market, where you are not actually taking anything into that market to enable you compete. If you take our position now in South Sudan, we don't even export anything. And the oil we were depending on has come down. We are not benefiting. You can see the floating of pound in the market.
Peter Mayen, the chairperson of People's Liberal Party, agrees.
We think the government really first need to work to restore peace in the country. At the same time, it is important for government to work to improve its governance. Also, to create an economic that is able to sustain itself before emerging to any regional or any international market.
The East African Community Treaty requires members to respect the principles of democracy, rule of law, accountability, transparency, and social justice as a condition for admission. Okony worries that the other members in East African Community will take advantage of South Sudan.
Now you would like to invite the East African and bring all the unemployed from Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Tanzania to South Sudan. So they can easily take over the business here where our youth will remain unemployed.
Mayen is calling on leaders of the regional bloc to pressure South Sudan's government and former rebels to form the transitional government of national unity and end the suffering of its citizens.
They need to pressure South Sudan to be able to meet the standards that is required in terms of good governance. And at the same time, it's important to help South Sudan to be able to build in industries.
Biel Boutros is a member of the SPLM in opposition, who sits on the National Constitution Amendment Committee and supports the move.
Introducing the third term and continuous being leadership, I think, would be a very bad thing to be learned by the South Sudanese. And South Sudanese would be very careful not to drag the country inside a scenario.
Boutros says entering the East African Community will boost regional trade and allow South Sudan to import goods at lower prices because of tax exemptions. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Coming up, Sudanese are mourning the death of a prominent politician. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today
What do you think about volunteerism and charity work?
I think it's very good and it's also a way to help the society, although I've never had the opportunity to take part in it.
I think volunteerism is a good thing because it's extending services to the people, and I would encourage people to volunteer.
It's good because you get to help the orphans and the needy people who don't have, so it's very good to volunteer.
You have to work and you have to help some people who doesn't know something. So it's good for us to volunteer.
I think volunteerism and charity work is a great initiative. It can enhance your CV in one way and it can make you know what's happening in other organizations too.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Thousands of Sudanese are mourning the death of opposition politician Hassan Abdallah At-Torabi, who died from a heart attack over the weekend in Khartoum. The 84-year-old politician and Islamic scholar was a well-respected figure across the Arab world. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Thousands of Sudanese gathered at Buri Cemetery to pay their respect to At-Torabi, who was considered the mastermind of the military coup that brought President Omar al-Bashir to power more than 26 years ago. He was Mr. Bashir's supporter until he had a falling out with the Sudanese president in 1999 and established the opposition Popular Congress Party. Qaisar Musa Zain is a lecturer of political science at Khartoum University. Musa says the death of Torabi is a serious setback for his party. He says the Popular Congress Party will have a bleak future without Torabi.
His charisma and his role was very essential for the well-being of the party. So I think gradually this party will be of less influence in Sudanese politics.
Ibrahim Essanossi, who worked closely with Torabi, has been appointed the party secretary general until a party conference is called to elect a successor for Torabi. Musa says the transition in the party's leadership comes at a crucial time in the history of Sudan.
There will be no problem because now they have no acute confrontation with the government. So I think things will go smooth until the congress of the party.
Torabi was known for speaking out on issues of democracy in Sudan. He also advocated for a theocratic system of governance in Sudan by influencing President Bashir to reintroduce Islamic Sharia law. But Musa says it will be a challenge for anyone to fill the huge position of Torabi within his party and in the Sudanese political space.
There is no clear figure in the party with the exception of Siddiq, son of Hassan Torabi. So I think we need until they just decide finally the form of the new leadership.
Musa says the death of Torabi leaves behind a huge gap.
In the far future, his absence will allow new intellectual leadership for this group because he was the only one, the only thinker in the real meaning of the word.
Over the last 2 years, Torabi's party has supported President Bashir's call for a national dialogue to solve Sudan's crises and end its multiple wars in Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile states. Musa says Torabi's death will not change the politics of Sudan.
Torabi has many positions, different contradicting positions. It happens that his last position is to support the national dialogue, and in this context, he is just like others. So nothing significant about that.
Mr. Torabi has left behind a controversial legacy. His controversial policies initiated several years ago are still being implemented by President Bashir today. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
A high-level delegation from South Sudan's ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, visited Khartoum last week. Party officials say the visit was aimed at improving economic cooperation between the two countries. Nabil Biagio also has that story for VOA from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
The meeting between Sudan's National Congress Party and the SPLM was requested by the Sudan government. SPLM Acting Secretary General Gemma Nonu Kumba led her party delegation.
We discussed general issues on how we can cooperate among the two parties and build a stronger relationship. We also met with the economic sector and discussed economic-related issues, including issues of border trade between the two countries.
Kumba characterized the meetings as positive and says Sudan's National Congress Party and the SPLM will work together to address challenges ahead facing the two countries.
It's an important initiative from the part of the NCP to invite us and start conversation on how we can improve our relationship. And of course, as ruling parties, I believe the parties have a great role to play in fostering better relationship between the two countries, given the history of the two countries.
Kumba says the two countries must work together to benefit from each other's resources.
We have our people who are still here, who are still living here. We have a big number of students that are also here. We need to build trust among ourselves so that we can relate better than the way it is now. So this meeting is an initial meeting. We will develop a memorandum of understanding that will be signed.
The two parties have agreed to develop a joint cooperation agreement and a memorandum of understanding for future cooperation between the two countries. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
A South Sudanese bishop visiting Australia says he's amazed by the diaspora there and their ability to overcome obstacles like learning English and adapting to new laws that override their own culture. Bishop Anthony Pogo says one of the challenges facing South Sudanese parents in the diaspora is their inability to discipline their own children. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
If you were to visit the South Sudanese diaspora in Australia, you would find a vibrant and hard-working community with strong ties to their homeland. That's according to Bishop Anthony Pogo of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan. Pogo is visiting the Australian community for the second time. He says he has come across many South Sudanese who have inspired him.
I met a young lawyer who is almost completing his studies, and it made me proud that he studied here and is able to is almost completing his studies as a lawyer. I was being told of another person who is an engineer, aircraft maintenance engineer, who is doing very well, and I think almost assistant manager in the place where he is working.
Pogo says South Sudanese communities in Australia are adapting to the challenges of their new country. He says many have worked hard to buy houses and plant roots for their children. They often work multiple jobs to pay for basic necessities and support their families in Australia, as well as those back in East Africa.
You know, although they're doing well, they also struggle. They have to pay bills. But because many of them would be thinking about their obligations to their family back home, they want to do what they can to help. But in the process, some might struggle financially.
Pogo says when he visits the diaspora in the West, he tries to remind them that they are lucky because they live in a place where anyone can work to take advantage of the opportunities that are almost non-existent for many back home.
I know that there are many young people in South Sudan who would want to go to university but may not have the opportunity, either because places are few or they may not have the resources and there are no options for them to either take a loan or even, you know, get the needed resources.
Pogo says the South Sudanese diaspora in Australia maintain a strong connection to their homeland. Many stay connected to the social, political, and economic matters in South Sudan.
We have been encouraging some of these people to say that when the right time comes, they should also consider returning to South Sudan, because I think that will be important. Of course, some would say yes, they have been thinking about that, but the lack of peace has been a concern to many of them.
Pogo says many South Sudanese in the diaspora are concerned about the violence and instability that remains in South Sudan. Despite the ongoing violence, Bishop Pogo says the diasporas remain confident about the future of South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
As the world celebrates the International Women's Day tomorrow, South Sudanese women continue to suffer from gender-based violence. The National Police Service and some women rights groups are putting in place measures aimed at ending violence against women across the country. Mungome Dev's Rokarinj has this report for VOA from Juba.
15-year-old Rose Kiko wanted to enroll in secondary school and continue her studies when she completed primary school in 2008. Her brothers had different plans for her.
My brother is beating me every day. Every day they're forcing me to say, you go, if you don't want to go for that man, I will kill you outside. If you don't want, I will go and kill you everywhere. If you are a place, I know it, I will go and kill you in what you are going to stay for. She beating me, then I loosen my teeth.
Kiko's brothers wanted her to get married. Kiko finally escaped from her brothers and stayed with some distant relatives where she struggled to pay for her school fees. She's happy she was not forced to marry a man she says was old enough to be her grandfather. But the damage was done. She lost three of her front teeth during the beatings she endured from her brothers. The theme of this year's International Women's Day is Pledge for Parity. This is a promise for a fairer, more equitable society in which men and women have equal value. In 2014, South Sudan ratified the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. In the same year, President Kiir and the United Nations Secretary General's Special Envoy on Sexual Violence, Zainab Bangura, signed a joint communique committing South Sudan to develop an action plan to end the use of sexual violence and gender-based violence in South Sudan. Another victim of gender-based violence, Tabitha Nyamer, says after losing her husband in 2009, her in-laws convinced her to use the life insurance money she had received to build a house in Juba. Days later, she was informed that the only way she would be entitled to live in that house was under one condition, that she be inherited by her brother-in-law.
When I tried to refuse, my father said, no, you have to respect our culture. You have to go back with your brother-in-law, go and stay with them. When I went there, we even discussed again. I said, no, I'm not going to stay with your son. Or when I refused, I came back to my father's house. Up to now, we are still in that problem. We are discussing it.
Inspired by her own experience of sexual violence, Susanna Pascale founded the local NGO Women Advancement Organization. She says cases of gender-based violence are all too common. Pascale was forced to marry a man 35 older than her when she was only 15 years old.
My elder sister also was forced. The husband came and said, I will shoot, I will fire everybody in this house if you don't give me this girl. And then she was taken at the age of 15 years. And I watched that. It pained me. My mom could always cry and tell us, you know, up to now I'm still feeling the headache because I was beaten by my uncles to marry your father. Up to now I'm still crying because this thing is still hurting me.
Colonel Kwachijok Dominique Amondoch heads a special unit established at the South Sudan National Police Service in 2014 to deal with cases of gender-based violence. He says some cases are criminal in nature.
Rape and also sexual assault, also domestic violence. And you say sometimes you find kidnap of children. Also we have adultery.
He says the police have established offices to handle gender-based violence cases at Melekia, Munuki, Gudele, and Gumbo police stations, as well as Juba Teaching Hospital. But he says addressing gender-based violence cases is often challenging.
Sometimes you find that a husband can beat a wife, and when she comes to report, the husband come and become angry, say that, no, you have no right, because she's my wife, and I pay a dowry for her. So the women, according to tradition, they look as women as a property.
He says they are working with women's groups who will educate the general public about gender-based violence, including forced marriages and wife beating. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rakarinj.
And that report by Mugume Davis Rakarinj brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.